Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the woeful world of Biden press conferences. Curtis Houck is positively aglow at how many press briefings he has to follow. We've got Kirby at the Pentagon. We've got Biden. We've got Jen Psaki. We've got things to watch. We've got, oh, did you see this? Joe Biden can't even get the website correct. Vaccines.com. No, that's not what it is. It's vaccines.gov. And my boy Ben was like circling it in red like, hello, maybe just turn around and look at your screen. But it's not good news out there for Joe Biden. In fact, the latest poll at Real Clear Politics, the USA Today Suffolk poll, has Biden's approval at 41%, disapproval at 55%. That's a minus 14. It's just one poll. But, you know, this is where we are always going to play the game. When there's a poll that's this bad, who will cover this poll? And you can say, well, you can't expect the networks to jump up and report on a poll from USA Today. I can't, because I can go back to CNN from February 28, 2021, touting a USA Today Suffolk poll on how Trump owns the Republican Party and how 46% of Republicans would go third party to vote for Trump. See, when a poll verifies or affirms something that a network wants to say, then they'll use it. But sadly, when a poll result comes out in a disagreeable way, often what happens is, did we do that poll? You know, it just doesn't seem to matter. Kyle Drennan noted this on Newsbusters. He wrote, despite Chuck Todd warning on Sunday's Meet the Press that President Biden's falling poll numbers amid the disaster in Afghanistan could signal a forever stain on his presidency, that evening's Nightly News and Monday morning's Today Show completely ignored the negative findings in their own latest survey. I had to make this point to Kyle. I said, well, you talk about a forever stain. I am kind of an expert in forever stains. I'm very good at spilling on myself, and usually a forever stain involves blueberry pie. You know, get the stain stick. Tim did it again. This was Chuck Todd doing sort of the data download that he likes to do on this show. And I think it shows you to some degree the difference between the Meet the Press show, the Sunday show, which really is meant for political junkies, for partisans of both parties. That's the kind of show that's for. And when you get to the evening news, they figure, oh, no, this is for people who are just going to check out the news for 15 minutes. We don't want to depress them with Joe Biden being down 14 points in the polls, so we won't be sharing that. And in this case, that the NBC poll is bad for Biden, we don't want to share that. What Chuck Todd said on Meet the Press about the NBC poll, among all adults, Mr. Biden's approval rating stands at a fairly mediocre 49%, 48% disapproving. Not surprisingly, approval of Mr. Biden's handling of the situation in Afghanistan, as we're watching all of this, is extremely low, just 25%. And that's the problem you have, is that one issue is going to drag down the whole thing. So then Chuck Todd adds, the president's overall slippage is less about Afghanistan than about two other issues. Approval of his handling of the coronavirus is down a whopping 16 points. Just 53% approve now, down from 69% in April. And approval of his handling of the economy is standing at 47%. That's upside down now because it was at 52. So events are not going well. You know, I am just upset, as I'm sure most people are, at the way the Delta variant and the coronavirus is rearing its ugly head. You know, we've gone from, you don't need to wear masks. Here in Virginia, the door says CDC recommends mask usage. So basically they're trying to shame you into it. It's like, I'm double vaccinated. I don't want to wear a mask. So even though you go and you get double vaccinated, you feel like an anti-vaxxer going into the store not wearing a mask, like you're somebody's going to attack you for not caring about health. But this kind of, you know, is sad as it is, it's not going to be a good thing for Biden or the Democrats. Gavin Newsom is having trouble beating a recall effort in California. Part of that is the way that the COVID numbers haven't gone the way that they should. And that's going to come back and bite the Democrats. And Gavin Newsom was one of these people who was generally hailed, like Andrew Cuomo, as someone who managed coronavirus well. Even though, again, California's numbers and New York's numbers were never good enough to justify all of the cheerleading, but it's kind of what liberal networks do. Anyway, Todd did conclude this poll talk by saying, let's be honest, with headlines like this one in The Economist, the British news magazine, the cover on screen read, Biden's debacle. The human tragedy at the end of this forever war is threatening to be a forever stain on Mr. Biden's presidency. So there, you know, the latest spin on all of this is Joe Biden, he's so courageous to end this when other politicians would not. That on some level is a knock on Barack Obama. Everybody knows that Joe Biden was the dove in Barack Obama's administration. Joe Biden didn't want to go after Osama bin Laden. Wouldn't be prudent. He wanted to get out of Afghanistan. They got out of Iraq and left a big hole for ISIS to move into. That's got to be the concern now. What's going to happen in Afghanistan with Al-Qaeda, and will it give them a haven to launch attacks on Europe and the United States? Those are all things to come. They're all things to worry about. You know, we kind of stopped worrying about Islamic terrorism under Trump. It just really wasn't, it became not such a big deal. And so now we're at a point where the news media constantly tell us, and the Department of Homeland Security under Biden tells us, that it's those crazy fascist white right-wingers that are the terrorist threat now. I don't like those terrorists any better. It doesn't matter which color they are, and it doesn't matter which religion they are necessarily. Terrorism is terrorism. But Islamic terrorism isn't something we've been worrying about, and now maybe we're going to have to worry about it again. The real concern here is, yes, is that all of these negative news stories are going to end up dragging down not just Biden's numbers, that it does threaten to drag down the Democrats overall, and they're already upset and struggling. So we should keep an eye on the polls. You know, look at websites like Real Clear Politics or PollingReport.com, I like. And you can play this game that we like to play, which is, ooh, look at the polls they're doing, and which of these polls are the networks and the newspapers actually running? Are they putting them at the top of the newscast? Are they putting this poll on page A1, or is it going to be end up on A16? That's the sort of thing we need to watch. We'll be trying to watch that for you. You know, there's a new show coming at Free Speech America. Tieran Rose Mandelberg here has a new show called Censor Track with TR. She's not Theodore Roosevelt, but she definitely has spunk. It looks good already. If you haven't seen a clip on Twitter, check it out, the Free Speech America Twitter. There's no ICA on that Twitter. Free Speech AMER. You should follow that account. Free Speech AMER. ICA. Joining us now in the Newsbusters podcast, Rich Noyes, MRC Research Director, the pride of Agawam, Massachusetts, or was it Agawam High School?
It was Agawam High School in Agawam, Massachusetts. We were called the Brownies.
Really?
That's true.
Oh, well.
Still are.
Okay, nobody calls you the Pot Brownies?
Not me.
No, not you. Yes, Rich is sober and serious. And, you know, we were lucky to get Rich in 1999. For us, it was like getting a seasoned quarterback in the middle of his career. He's got a new study out that we've been talking about for a while, this whole notion of how much news is in cable news. And we're kind of slow sometimes to do cable news because it's like, ugh, how much of it are we going to need to study? Because there's a lot of that. And so we found kind of what we expected to find, not as much news on cable news as there should be.
Well, yeah, and we put a number to it. I guess that's what it's not going to be a big surprise. But about 4/5 of what you see on cable news isn't really news. It's a discussion show. It's talk radio on TV. It's interviews. It's discussions with roundtables of pundits, which is the number one thing. I mean, actual talking to senators, congressmen, that's way down the list. They're talking to each other. They're talking for the sake of having something for the audience. Actual news was about 22% of the cable diet. If you look at primetime, it's less than 10%. And if you look at the topic, there's really just one topic. It's politics. We looked at a random sample of hours over the course of the first 5 months of this year, February through June. We skipped January because of January 6th and the inauguration being sort of very atypical days. But other than that, we just sort of did a random sample. What do we get for each hour? And there was some live coverage. There was a few news reports. There was breaking news and hard news days. There was soft news days. But, you know, we had a good mix of all of it. And cable was, yeah, as we said, about 22% hard news, either field reports, anchors, or them covering a live event without talking over it. And then the rest of the airtime was devoted to discussion. Put another way, if you look at the average cable hour, 9 minutes of it is hard news, 18 minutes of it is commercials. We didn't count commercials in our percentages, so that's a little different. But it's you know, it's really a very mediocre part of their minuscule part of their diet.
Yeah, I think that is fascinating. And cable news network, I mean, the word news is right in there. And yet, you know, the first thing you showed this to me and the first thing I thought of was Brian Stelter did an interview with Ezra Klein when Ezra Klein had a podcast on Vox. And it was kind of funny because Ezra Klein was trying to get Stelter to admit that CNN and Fox were alike in some ways. And he was not going there. He was not allowing it at all. But he did say cable news today is a 24/7 talk show about politics. So they know what they are. And clearly, I guess they figured out that is the business model.
Well, it is the business. I mean, I'm not sure how well it's working. CNN's not exactly going gangbusters in the ratings. But he said also that there's less of a need for news headlines and more of a need for talk about the news, analysis of the news. I'm not sure you can have a lot of good analysis of the news until you've laid the predicate of saying what the news is. And I think the conceit is that, well, everybody's going to get their news on their phones or get the news on their computers, and we'll just be the talk show about the news that you've already gotten someplace else. And I think that takes away the power that, you know, I'm no huge fan of Ted Turner, but his idea when he founded CNN was we're going to bring the world together by showing the news as it happens. Foreign news, by the way, he didn't like the term. He called it international news. Mm-hmm. But it was about 3-4% of all the topics that are out there. And this is including the Biden-Putin summit, things like that. I mean, there's just not a lot of foreign news on CNN or the other networks. All the networks were basically the same as well. We looked at Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN. And if you take into account that we had a sample, we weren't looking at the same days for the same networks, there's really no difference. They're all into this format now.
See, but I think it's interesting because you would say CNN has a CNN international channel, and they would love to boast about the idea that somehow they have the most foreign bureaus, they have the best distribution of foreign correspondents, and you're saying their foreign news hole, if you use their term, the journalistic term, is just as small as the others.
Yes, it is. It's similar to the others. I mean, we didn't measure it enough to know if the differences are meaningful, but they're all very, very low percentages. No, CNN's news is like MSNBC's and Fox's, which is they have anchors sitting there talking to guests, mostly in Washington, pontificating about the news, and there isn't a lot of field reporting, background work happening. You know, the experts they have on are all contributors and commentators who were signed up with the network to give their predictable views on things. You know, it's sort of a miracle that CNN can get its 900,000 viewers a day that the ratings suggested it has, because, you know, it's the same same basic story day in and day out and has been for several years.
I think they claim that they want to have better trust of their viewers. But you would think that one of the ways to build trust would be to do more hard news, that they would be more credible if they weren't constantly showing you their opinions. I mean, you had a number here, about just explicit, overt commentary that they were doing now?
Yeah, it's about 6% of the total day, but more of that in prime time. I mean, you know, the prime time shows, and again, this is true for all the networks, often start with a very long opinionated commentary by the host. You know, they talk about the news of the day and give it their partisan spin. And I'm not sure, you know, who that helps. It doesn't help build their credibility. It helps cement their reputation as partisans. I think, yes, if they were to do the hard news and maybe have a small analysis segment, it might work better for their long-term reputation. I mean, they get irritated at being called partisan, but then they act like partisan day in and day out.
Yeah, I think everybody can see that. And so if we're sitting and watching CNN, or if we're sitting here watching Fox, we're sitting here watching MSNBC, I think in all of these cases we can say this network has a base audience. They have people who watch them sometimes not just an hour a day, sometimes 5 or 6 hours a day. I've certainly know people who will watch Fox for 5 or 6 hours a day, starting with my dad. So that builds in that whole idea of that people are tuning in for this. So they're doing it this way because they figure, yeah, they focus grouped, this is what works.
I think that's probably right. I mean, Pew did a study earlier this spring, and it found that the MSNBC and CNN self-described audience was, I think, 20 to 30 points more liberal than conservative. The Fox audience was about 30 points more conservative than liberal, self-described. But I also think the other dimension of this, it costs a lot of money to send a reporter,
yeah,
and a producer and maybe an interpreter, maybe hire some local bodyguards to go out into the world and cover world events the way CNN has been known for over the years and the other networks as well. If you just sit in a studio and just, you know, you have a car service, bring someone in, and then you talk for 11 minutes with four different guests, you know, how much does that cost? It's more or less you turn the lights on and you have the signal going out and you're done. So I think this is also a cheap way of doing the news, as well as maybe what, you know, the fiercest partisans want to watch.
Well, you mentioned Pew, and I think one of the things we've talked about that sort of got us going down this avenue, and Brent Bozell, our founder and president, this is one of those things that he watches enough cable news that this bugs him. But Pew did a study how many years ago?
Oh, it was at least 8 years ago.
And they found back then that there was a much larger a lot more news back then. The one that stood out back then, it was only MSNBC had like 15% news.
Right.
And the others were close to half and half.
Yeah, that's right. It was about a little more than half on CNN, a little less than half on Fox. It was 8 years ago. I just looked it up. And now, yes, Fox and CNN have moved to where MSNBC has been for a long time. It's an ongoing talk show about politics, and they might squeeze in some other headlines if it interests people, if there's something going on, but they'll get back to politics as soon as they can. I think that's sort of a, you know, it doesn't really utilize 24/7 news for what it could be, the potential it could have, but it is sort of a lowest common denominator set of programming that, you know, works. I will say this about CNN. I mean, one of the reasons I think you've seen MSNBC eclipse CNN on the side of the ratings is if you're going to have this kind of ongoing talk show format, it's the strength of your personalities that will carry that and make people want to watch. And CNN has a lot of, I would say, charitably nondescript personalities doing the news. People who, you know, can't, you know, they're not going to be the star of any show, and yet there they are trying to act like their opinions are some great sage-like knowledge of how the world works. You know, Fox has good personalities. MSNBC has good personalities on the left. I'm not sure about CNN. I think they're still a work in progress, and they have been for years.
Well, their top rated show is Chris Cuomo, and which is one reason they're absolutely unwilling to be embarrassed by anything that he's done for his brother. Yeah, somebody had tweeted the other day that Brian Stelter's ratings on Sunday were, you know, below CNN's rerun of History of the Sitcom. And maybe that's unfair because that's the kind of show CNN does to sort of say, hey, and now a non-news show about your favorite TV shows from the 70s and 80s. But yeah, I think that they do have a problem with personality. But I think they also have this problem where, yeah, they've been so incredibly anti-Trump. And people just, they're like, when you open your shows with these big, pompous, thunderbolt-throwing editorials, yeah, I don't know why you would have news in the middle of your name. Now, you have done some research on immigration, the border crisis. I think we can guess right now that even if the border numbers are bad again in August, we found, what, 4 minutes? Just 4 minutes in July?
That's right. It was the border crisis was a major crisis in March. It was 113 minutes on just the three broadcast evening newscasts. That fell by 96% to 4 minutes and 20 seconds in July. So far through the first 20 days of August, it's about 5 minutes, maybe 5 minutes and a little bit of change. So it seems like we might set another record in terms of the raw numbers of people crossing the border and the scope of the problem. But the news is turning its eyes elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you can understand now to some extent that they would say, well, we've got Afghanistan. We've got a bigger story than the border.
No, I think that's right. But, I mean, the way they're covering Afghanistan now is it's an unmitigated disaster for President Biden, with a few sort of really hacky exceptions raising their hand to say otherwise. But that's pretty much how they were covering the border in March. It was something where no one was giving him any slack. It was a terrible situation. They weren't letting reporters in. You know, even liberal news outlets were criticizing him. And they never really fixed the problem, but the media just lost interest and went away. And I think now with, you know, most Western journalists now fleeing Afghanistan, my guess is this is going to fade a lot faster than people think about. And so I think this will not be fixed by Biden fixing the problem. This will be fixed by the media simply moving on and not covering it.
Yeah. I mean, you hate to be pessimistic about it, but I think pessimism here is the smart option. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, Rich, about this is obscure, but ABC's post-campaign special in 92. And it was, you know, Andrew Rosenthal, the son of Abe Rosenthal, who was basically boasting about, you know, all this ultra-negative coverage of George H.W. Bush. And he was just like, well, what did you expect? The news was all bad. Well, no, our whole point in 92 was the economy was actually recovering. There were good news stories. They just didn't want to cover. But, I mean, I think of that now when you say, well, look, trying to find a good news angle on Afghanistan is pretty tough. I mean, the administration's trying to make it sound like everything's really picking up, but it's been very, you know, just to be accurate, it's just not going to be a good news, positive news story.
No. And what you have now is you've got some of the usual suspects like Matthew Dowd, who's sort of more of a freelance hack these days, Joy Reid on MSNBC, criticizing the press for being too negative about Biden's handling of Afghanistan because they're not seeing the proper context. They're not, you know, they're not spending time covering gun violence instead. I mean, they're trying to find some other story that deserves more attention than this. And it's just an episode in flailing that, you know, embarrasses everybody concerned.
Now, I was going to say, I began today by talking about the latest USA Today Suffolk poll. Biden's approval rating has now dropped in this particular poll. It's just one, but it's the USA Today poll. 41% approve of Biden, 55% disapprove. We're seeing, when you look at the Real Clear polling average, that the paths are crossing now. Would you care to guess, as a polling analyst, where this is going to go?
Well, what a president needs to, you know, course correct at a time like this is some kind of a good news story. And Biden has really only had one good news story, and you can argue how much has been because of him, and that's the fall in COVID cases from when he took office to about June and July. That was when the vaccines were being rolled out. It's when summertime started opening things up. There was a whole set of factors that, and people were getting also checks in the mail. People responded favorably to polls when they got a check in the mail. But, you know, that's going the wrong way now, and there really is no other story that looks like it can replace it. I mean, you know, COVID may get back under control, but now there's going to be a lot of other issues that are going to be competing for time and attention and evaluating the presidency. The economy may be his saving grace, but a lot of that will just be, you know, the pent-up demand and the pent-up energy from all the lockdowns coming to the fore. It's going to be very hard to see a positive set of stories that really help boost and build Biden up in going into the midterm election year.
Yeah, this is what I always say about, you know, approval ratings, especially when the media does them, is that to me it always feels like a sense of how are we doing in shifting the polls in favor of who we like? Because I think they know that bad news stories, an overwhelming bad news story, is going to drive down an approval rating. And yeah, the good news story is going to drive up an approval rating. At least that's got to be true for Democrats. Maybe sometimes a lot of negative coverage of a Republican is going to backfire.
Yeah, no, I would say, you know, it's too early to start talking midterms yet, but you'll know when the media spend most of their time trashing individual Republicans, the Republican Party in general, it means there's not a lot of good things they can say to sort of boost confidence in the home team.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, it is early, and I always resent, you know, we're at least we're in August now of the off year. You know, this is a better time if we were going to talk about Terry McAuliffe versus Glenton Youngkin in Virginia. That's actually the campaign season we're actually in. Not that there's a lot of national news coverage of that, because that would probably only help Youngkin. Terry McAuliffe is running for a second time, non-consecutively, and we can always expect that the Washington Post and our Virginia-centric national media will come around for the Democrat. But yeah, I think it is. I hope it's too early to talk about the midterms. But you have to think sometimes when you look at the way that they cover the Democrats with a certain amount of desperation about the Biden agenda, that they're worried that by the midterms, there's no Biden agenda is going to get through if the Republicans take back the houses.
Yeah, I think that would be something they should be nervous about. We do have a couple of bellwethers coming up. You mentioned Virginia. The other one is, of course, California. I mean, if McAuliffe wins in Virginia, that's sort of to be expected these days because of the, you know, the northern part of the state has gone so blue. If Gavin Newsom beats the recall in California, that's also to be expected. It's a very Democratic state. But if either one of those Democrats fall in 2021, that's a very bad sign for 2022 for the Democrats.
Well, and I think that we will be watching the Newsom race is September 14.
Yes.
We'll be paying quite a bit of attention to that. We've noticed an uptick in nasty coverage of black conservative Larry Elder because he has been leading in the polls. If you vote to recall Newsom, then you can't vote for Newsom in the second round. And there's, 45 or 6 candidates. Larry Elder's leading in the poll. So now, yes, the Republicans, the Democrats are coming out against him. Bill Maher's inveighing against him. Dianne Feinstein's becoming the new Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They're worried about her dying, and Larry Elder gets to name a replacement, and there goes Democrat control of the Senate. I mean, that kind of desperation's coloring the news coverage we get.
Yeah, I went back to our archives when the Gray Davis recall, the last few weeks of it were stories trashing Arnold Schwarzenegger as some kind of a Nazi. And all it did is build him up, and I think he ended up with 46% of the replacement vote. So he won a very solid victory in that recall. You know, I'm not entirely sure what they're doing, but yes, you haven't heard a lot of coverage nationally of his recall. They don't want to add fuel to the fire. But, you know, if there was a good story to tell about Gavin Newsom, I think you'd have been hearing that all along. And, you know, they're worried. There's also the Cuomo story out there where Cuomo is, you know, he was the media darling of 2020, and now he is now the former governor of New York in 2021.
And this happens despite, yeah, all the pro-Cuomo media in the end didn't save him because the media coverage isn't everything about politics. But it's an awfully important part about politics, which is why you should come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.